Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app. Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
It is 12:05 on the show on KMOX. Chris Ranji, Amy Marks, Coors, Kevin Wheeler with you here. Obviously, breaking news today with the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. We've been on that throughout the first 2 hours. I'll have a little bit more on that. We are going to get to some Cardinals talk. The Cardinals and Cubs open up a series tonight at Busch Stadium. That'll be a 7:15 first pitch. Pre-game show will start at 6:20 here on KMOX. We'll check in with Mike Claiborne around 1 o'clock. We've got our regular Redbird report coming up at 12:30. So we're going to mix in some more of the normal elements of the show as we go along. But obviously, you know, the decision today is historically significant. It's certainly setting off a lot of conversations around the country. Hopefully everybody's conversations will be calm. And I'm including the ones that are going to happen because there will be protests, which is fine as long as nobody's going to escalate beyond that. And I don't think the people that are, quote unquote, protesters are the ones that are going to be escalating. I mean, there are other people that use these things as opportunities to do terrible things.
Sure.
And I think that was, there's some similarities to that too. Like with January 6th, there were a lot of people there that were not doing anything wrong. They were just there voicing their opinion, which you are welcome to do. It's the people that did things that were wrong. That
people who then went
trouble.
Over to the Capitol.
Right. Well, or not even.
I mean, there was the rally.
Not go over there. You go over there. That's fine. Just don't go
inside?
In there. Yeah.
Well, there are a lot of people
inside. Things.
Yeah. You're
don't,
right.
Don't hit Capitol Police. Don't encourage other people to do those things. Like there were people there that did not do those things. Those people were protesting, and you know those are not the people that we're talking about. And in this case, same idea. Like people that are going to be peaceful, obviously, you know, have at it. That's what our country is all about. You're allowed to gather. You're allowed to tell people you don't like what they say or you want to change things, but you are not allowed to break stuff, to endanger other people, to endanger other people's property, all that.
And it was extremely important the president made that clear. And again, it's not necessarily true that just because he asks people or tells people, hey, you may not agree with this, but don't go do all this other stuff, that they're going to listen. You might still have some people who act out, but it is very important for elected leaders, whether or not they are popular, to make it explicit to people who follow them, voted for them, or even didn't, to not engage in some sort of violence or destruction or anything of the sort. Because there is legitimate concern for a lot of people that now that this has happened, what is next? Mm-hmm. Are you coming for contraception next? Are you coming for same-sex marriage next? What's going to be the next thing? Because we were told by justices on this court who were confirmed over the last several years that this particular thing was settled and that they were not going to revisit it, and they have gone back on that. So there is legitimate concern when people are telling you, hey, don't worry about these. Don't worry about contraception. They're not going to do that. Well, maybe they do, and there is a reason to be legitimately concerned, but that is not a good enough reason to commit violence. And I think it's very important that people don't, and people get that message. And especially because of the environment that we're in now, it's important for a leader to disseminate that message, because we have a very recent instance of that not happening.
You know, this conversation we've talked about, you know, how this issue of abortion is so emotionally charged, and often it is accompanied with great hate and vitriol and a complete lack of understanding and compassion. And one thing I appreciate having this conversation, in this room and Ranj, I mean, we're so different politically, but I respect you as a person, you respect me as a person, and we're friends. And you know that all pro-life people don't hate women and want to strip the rights away of women and bring them back to the, you know, 16th century, because I'm a pro-life woman. I don't hate women. And I know that you are pro-choice because you care about people and are compassionate. And so I think when you are talking to someone who believes differently than you, but you understand and respect that person, that can help bring down the rage. I also think it's important for us to check our own sides when there is unsavory behavior on our sides. And I've seen some, not all, I will not use a broad brushstroke, but we had some callers, right? Some ugly comments made, you know, well, the woman should wait to get married, or it's easy, it's irresponsible for the woman to get pregnant. And my response would be, why don't you have men wait until they get married? And if it's easy for the woman not to get pregnant, why don't the men just keep their equipment in their pants? Because that would help. And this responsibility, it surprises me how much the responsibility for this always falls on the woman. When, again, when a woman has sex, she can have one baby a year, basically. A man can impregnate a different woman every day. So if you're just talking about people are getting pregnant left and right, that falls on the male as well. And lastly, again, sorry, I do feel sometimes on the Republican side, there can be this like pontification, the sanctimony, as if you need to live a better life. And that can happen. You brought up gay marriage as well. You hear a lot will condemn, like, oh, well, this movement, the LGBT movement, is sexually promiscuous. Go to a straight guy's bachelor party in Las Vegas.
I've been to one.
And tell me that that's not promiscuous.
I've been to more than one.
So I just think if your first response on this is to cast judgment on others and to set yourself as a moral superior, then you might want to look in the mirror first.
And that's why I think this is important, because I use the ideas of empathy and awareness all the time, because I think a lot of people lack both of them. And it's good to have at least one, but I require you have two of them, because if you have them both, maybe we're in a better place of understanding here. And maybe there's less hypocrisy because you have people like, and I know that this isn't the end all. There are, I'm sure, a not insignificant amount of people who are guilty of this. But you have from Pennsylvania, Tim Murphy, who was a congressperson, and you have, I think his name was Rokita from Indiana, who were pro-life people. They were pro-life Congress people, whether it's state legislature or federal. And they asked their mistresses or pressured their mistresses and or ex-wives to get abortions. These are pro-life people who have gone and done that. And I would guarantee you there are more than just those two who say, it's not good enough for you, but when I need it, I'm going to go do it. And I'm going to do it on the down low so nobody hears about this. And these were all reported. All of these things were reported by legitimate sources in the day. And so that's one of my main problems with this, is that I do believe there are a lot of sanctimonious people out there who do not live by this. They say, you shouldn't get one. And it's bad if you do. And you should feel bad. And maybe you should go to jail for it. But if I need it, because my case is different, I'm going to have my mistress go do this, or I'm going to have my ex-wife do this sort of thing. That, to me, is extremely bothersome, because I don't know how many people are like this, but I promise you there are pro-life advocates in Congress now who absolutely feel that way and would do it if it benefited them personally.
Yeah, I think there's two concerns on this from my end that I haven't got into too much on the detail on it, but there's one, which is this is not going to affect people equally. Poor people are going to be disproportionately affected by this. They will, because people who have money will have the means to travel, will have the means to go where they want to go or need to go to have the procedures done. So this will have a negative impact on poor people more than it will on middle class or people with money. And that, to me, that's a concern, because it is affecting one part of the nation, one part of each state, more than it will affect others. And the other part of it is I'm not real big on the imposition of morality on other people. Now, we do have some of that, right? We're not allowed to kill each other. We're not allowed to steal each other's things.
Because, but that's you affecting
no,
me.
No, but it's also, you know what I mean? It's also because we agree on that.
Right.
As a species, as a society, we agree that we all agree that we don't want those things. In this area, there is dispute, and we don't have this federally. This is not about the federal side. This is about what's happening in the states now. We are going to have people who are in elected office who will vote to impose a morality that other people have to follow that may not be their own. And it is a topic that is not agreed upon. We know this by polling. We know this because there is no scientific agreement on where the line is. Is it conception? Is it 12 weeks? Is it 2 weeks? We don't have an agreement on where we go from being a part of another person to being a person all by yourself.
But we know there is a line because there are less people who would be on board with the banning of contraception than would be on board with the banning of abortion outright.
Well, sure.
Because there are people who don't believe that it happens at contraception. Right. Or there are people
at conception,
who
you mean,
or yeah, at the act yeah, or yeah, whatever yeah, it is. Yeah. Like there are people who don't believe that should be included in this. And so I fully understand why somebody might be concerned. And in fact, all of us should really be concerned about that happening, because as we can be idealistic about this if we want to. But the reality is people are still going to have sex and people are still going to have babies outside of wedlock and people are still going to have unwanted pregnancies. We can tell them don't do that and be smart about having a child, but we know it's just not going to happen. We have to be realistic. And so there is the University of California, San Francisco did a study on this about a year ago. The results came out and they found something about 20% of people who went ahead with unwanted pregnancies who did not get abortions were more likely to end up in poverty. The more people that end up in poverty is not a good thing for the rest of us, because it is a strain on the rest of our society. So I'm here dealing in real world consequences. We can be idealistic about this if we want to, but I think we have to really live in reality here.
Yeah, and I think speaking of living in reality, we have a constitutional republic with democratic values, and that public is the society is pro-choice. So for me right now, being pro-life, I want to advocate for women the best way that I can, with as much compassion, with as many resources as possible. And again, the reality is, if you are someone who is pro-life, okay, well then how do we help women from the very beginning, you know, from the moment of conception, whether it's with state funding and money or child support, helping them after childbirth as well, also being honest about the statistics and the data, educate people on, okay, you know, having kids will cost this much, or, you know, having, I don't want to dismiss the importance of family. My goodness, President Barack Obama brought that up in a speech in 2008, you know, the importance of fathers. So making sure we understand family dynamics, societal dynamics, and being truthful and honest with people, helping them set them up for success.
Yeah, got a lot more to cover. Obviously, some baseball at the bottom of the hour. Mike Claiborne later on. And, of course, more on the big story of the day with the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. It's Amy Marks, of course, Chris Ranji and Kevin Wheeler with you on the show on KMOX. I just wanted to take an audible breath for a moment.
Yeah.
For once.
I just walked out of the studio.
Yeah, it is.
And did that.
Heavy day.
Remember when we said that, it was only heavy at the beginning of the show?
Well,
we only started a few weeks ago and thought, just because things happened, we're going to lighten up.
That's the funny thing. We've been joking about that. And obviously, we haven't been around as a show for a long time, about a month right now. Not quite. What is it? 4 weeks? This is the end of the fourth week, I believe.
Feels like an eternity.
For you, I'm sure it does. But it is funny. And I think I've joked about this with friends and family members and things. They're like, yeah, we got thrown right into the deep end of the pool, right? You know, the first week, I'm not joking about this. This is serious. Like, first week, it was right after the Uvalde shooting. And then you had the Roe leak. And then we had January 6th hearings. And now this again. And the reality is that at this moment in our history, where it's a heavy world. I mean, we got a war going on in Ukraine that impacts everybody in the world because it disrupts. It disrupts, for example, the global oil supply, and it changes how those things work. We have worldwide inflation. We have conflict here on so many fronts. It is a heavy time right now. It just is.
So what's interesting is my last week with the St. Louis Blues in June of 2019. The Blues won the Stanley Cup, right? You had this great celebration. And then, of course, I was so thrilled to join Charlie Brennan the next week, the first week of July. And you had like the Kavanaugh hearings and the Trump presidency, and things were pretty contentious. And then you have, and I was like, okay, well, it's a little ugly now, but it's going to settle down. And then we had a worldwide pandemic and COVID. And then you had the summer with the George Floyd killing and the protests. Mm-hmm. And it keeps going. And I thought maybe it's always this heavy and I just didn't realize it. But you guys have said a couple times that Gen X had some.
Maybe that's nostalgia on our part. I don't think so.
Like going back to like what I remember, and you're on Twitter, 45? 45, I'm 50.
So. Well, I'm actually 45. I'm from St. Louis.
But I mean, like going back to what I remember are the 80s and the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. I don't really remember the 70s very well. I mean, I was 8 years old when the 70s wrapped up, you know, I mean, and I had just turned 8. So I don't really remember that decade particularly well. I do remember seeing long lines at gas stations when there was a fuel shortage, but I didn't have any concept of it, right? The 70s were a bit of a tough time. The early 80s still had a little bit of that carryover, but what I remember is mostly nobody talked about politics. My parents never talked about politics at all. I'm not even sure if they voted. Nobody cared about any of that stuff. When I went in high school, it wasn't a thing. We didn't talk politics. There was no Young Republicans Club, Young Democrats Club. There was nothing of that. I went to college. Yeah. Nobody approached. We had one guy at the University of Miami.
Look at this weirdo.
One guy who would ever protest, and it was the marijuana guy.
Yeah.
It was the hemp guy. Yeah. And the hemp guy.
That guy gets it.
The hemp guy looked exactly like the stereotypical stoner with the dreads and all that. There was nothing political. There were no big social movements, and there was no international conflict. You know, we had little things, right? When the first Gulf War happened, I mean, they were selling us T-shirts with fighter jets on them. Like, it was just not a big deal. And I think that a lot of us that are Gen Xers, especially some of the older end of the Gen X, we had it so easy, I think. And just in terms of how you grew up, there weren't a lot of these pressures. You didn't have the 24-hour news cycle. And it was only really starting to be a thing kind of late in our teens and all of that. And everybody since then has been really since the Bill Clinton years. That's where it started to ramp up, where politics became a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Okay, two short things. That's a great point that like the Bill Clinton years, that's what I remember. My goodness, I was like in kindergarten, right? And I remember paying attention to politics. I always thought I was an outlier because I was in the homeschool group, and we've always, you know, our mascot was the Constitution. So, you know, like basically I always thought I was the outlier. But one, you're right, it got super political with Clinton. And two, do you think Gen X would have been way more political if you had all of the internet and the cable news?
Yeah,
and
maybe.
Everything?
For sure.
There's nothing special about our generation. It's just that that's what was happening when we were growing up.
I honestly believe that a lot of this environment begins with cable networks that have taken an extreme position, because that did not really exist. First of all, the cable networks didn't. CNN was a thing when I was a kid, but it wasn't like a 24-hour cycle.
But barely.
And it's not the same as it is now, but there also wasn't a hyper-partisan popular network or two networks that were on all the time. And I think that's where this environment really began, like got hyper-inflated, was because of those things. But you're right. When I was, you know, I was a kid in the 80s, we, I think in grade school, did mock elections.
Yeah.
But that was just like to learn how elections work.
I don't even think we did that.
It wasn't about anything else. It wasn't very political. And in high school, nothing.
Nope.
And then in college, nothing. Nope. There were no Young Republicans or Young Democratic-ish, you know, organizations that I can remember in college.
Yeah, I consider it good fortune. But it also, I think, makes it seem what is normal now seem less normal to people my age.
Bueno. Albert is hit high and deep. A home run for Harrison Bader. Yadier Molina has homered.
Double play.
It's a big fly for Albert Pujols.
A home run in the first inning for Goldie.
This is the Redbirds Report.
All right, a much-needed break from the heavy stuff. Obviously, we got baseball coming your way on KMOX tonight. It's the Cardinals and the Cubs, 6:20 pregame show, 7:15 first pitch. And right as we were getting ready to talk baseball.
Yeah, we can't do the show, Kevin.
Amy's just jumped out of the chair.
Yeah, we can't do the show.
I got a cramp.
You got your it was your calf?
Yeah, my calf into my ankle. I got one of those major Charlie horses, and I literally jumped out of my chair.
You did? Like, yeah. You jumped. I did that, though, the other day. What did I do that for in the office? Oh, no, it was in here.
You did jump
out here.
Yeah,
my foot did that. My foot cramped up. I get them on the bottom of the foot where they just locks up and it...
Yeah, I don't really get that much. What I get is I ram my knee into something really bad. Yeah. I'm always hitting my legs on stuff.
I don't do that.
In this office.
How come you get Charlie horses in the pool, like your toe? You get a Charlie horse and your toe in the pool?
I don't know.
It's just you, Amy.
Please do not tell me it's only me. It's not me. I know. What's our text number?
314-436-7900.
Text that if you get...
You've been working here for how many years?
Three.
And you don't know
three, but more than that.
You don't know the phone number?
Ask Chris Myhill about how great
Amy,
I am with phone numbers.
Say the number again.
314-436-7900.
That's right. Very good. Very good. All right. So game one tonight, Cardinals and the Cubs, obviously here on KMOX, 7:15 for the pregame. I'm sorry, for the first pitch. Our 6:20 will be for our pregame show. We'll check in with Mike Claiborne coming up after the 1 o'clock news to do a little bit more. And, you know, without getting too nerdy here, because I'm pretty nerdy, I think a good series in Milwaukee, not a great series. A great series would have been winning 3 out of 4 or sweeping the 4-game series, but a good one when you go on the road against your division rival and split the 4-game series. And the story of it was the bullpen being amazing. They allow just one run. And I know that, you know, it's funny because before last year, I thought the bullpen had a chance to be one of the best in the National League, and it turned out to be a major problem. You know, guys ran out of gas. As the season went on, Alex Reyes' command went away. You didn't have Jordan Hicks. Helsley got hurt and wasn't a big part of it. This year, it looks like it should be more sustainable, but we do need to get to a point where they're doing less of the work, right?
Well, yeah, especially back-end guys. You can't just keep referring.
Well, the big guys.
You just can't keep going to them every single time. And that includes games that you not are just leading, but games that you're trailing, but you're close. If you're a run or two down, you'd like to be able to put in relievers that can keep it close, that can keep it a 1 or 2 run game. And if you don't feel confident in the earlier bullpen arms, then you can't really do that because it just isn't realistic to be going to the same relievers over and over again if the game is tight. So, yeah, and as we've talked before, because the offense is so good, that alleviates some of the pressure on them, and they've been a lot more consistent over the last several weeks, more so than they were at the beginning of the year. But this is a top five offense. It's a top five producing offense, which, again, you want to have more stability in the rotation for sure, and Flaherty is going to have to be part of that, and I think we can afford him some time to really, you know, get acclimated to being back. Because he is coming back from an injury. He's had multiple setbacks over the last couple of years. But before that happens, you at least have a bit of a safety blanket in the offense, knowing that more often than not, they're going to score runs for you, which more often than not will keep you in ball games. You're just hoping that it's biding time until the pitching staff really starts to solidify, and hopefully they do.
All right, so now I want to spend the rest of the time in this segment on the baseball side talking about how the rivalry is not as good anymore. The Cubs ruined it, man.
Like, because they're bad?
Because they're bad again.
Yeah.
They're bad again. That's not that they're just bad. They're bad again. You know, they went through, a 6 or 7 year rebuilding process. And during that time, you know, the Cardinals remained highly competitive. They were in the World Series, winning the World Series, doing all that while the Cubs were winning 60 games, 70 games, all that. So they went through this long rebuilding process. And when one side of a rivalry is not good, it's not really a rivalry.
Nah.
It's more like a pat on the head. Like, nice try, buddy. Like, good to see you again.
It's cute.
Because
you guys are, thanks for spending your money at our ballpark. We appreciate the victories.
And it's back to that again. And I thought for sure,
yeah,
you know, the Cubs dynasty that lasted all of 4 years before they had to tear it all apart and obviously decided they couldn't pay anybody to keep them around so they could maintain some level of success. Now we got to do this again where it's like, okay, you want to get excited for a rivalry. There'll be no rivalry. It's going to be calm because Cubs fans are just going to be there with like their shoulders up to their ears. Like, well, you know, we got 26 wins. Ugh.
Or they're not going to be there at all because that's the thing is that one of the things that makes this rivalry so great is that there's good proximity where it's only 4.5 hours. You can make a weekend out of it if you want to, but how many Cubs fans are going? They're going to be some here, and you might have some Chicago transplants who already live here, but there is a drastic decrease in the amount of people who want to drive south to go to St. Louis for the weekend to watch the Cubs because the Cubs stink.
Yeah.
On the other hand, though, you'll have a lot of Cardinals fans traveling up to Wrigley because
tickets
their team
are
is good.
To get.
Ticket. Well, they're easier to get.
A lot
they're still
easier.
Yeah. They're still.
I mean, they're
more
on,
difficult than most places, but it's still easier now to do it. But I mean, your team is good. You want to go watch them play.
You're the second or third largest market in the country, and you're on pace for less than 2 million fans,
which is very unusual for them.
I saw a great T-shirt a few years ago, maybe 2017, 2018. And it says the Chicago Cubs, a winning tradition since 2016.
Yep.
That's and about right. I hate making fun. You know, look.
Do you?
Yes, I do, because my wife's family are Cubs fans, right? I have a lot of friends that are Cubs fans, and it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous that a team and a franchise with those kinds of resources finally looks like they're getting it right, finally has a team that can win a World Series, and then just, it's like a puff of smoke in the wind. It's just gone. It's just gone that fast because ownership refused to do what it took to keep the team together. Because COVID hit and they lost money on all the real estate stuff. Well, all right, listen, you own a team.
Kevin, biblical losses.
Biblical losses
is what
right,
they
right,
said.
Right, right, right. I'm sure that they will never make back since they own almost all of the real estate around Wrigley Field. But like, and you could see it. Like, I'm joking about the attendance at Wrigley Field, I'm not joking about the fans. I'm actually making fun of ownership there, the Ricketts family, because the Cubs fans will go, even when this team was bad. Look at this. If you go back to 2012, 13, 14, 15, that was a franchise. They won 75 games, 71, 61, 66, 73. In all of those years, they were between 2.6 and 3.2 million fans.
Mm-hmm.
They drew, and it is now below 2 million. It was below 2 million last year. It's trending that way now, though it's going to be close. And it's because people are pissed at that ownership group.
Yeah.
Because they allowed it all to fall apart.
Once you give people a taste of winning, because for a long time, you know, in the 90s, when they really started to build a lot of it is the Wrigley Field following, which makes sense because it is a very cool place to go watch a ball game. It's a cool neighborhood, all that stuff. But at that time, there was no real taste of winning. And you didn't know what you were missing if you were a Cubs fan, right? Like, they're just kind of, they're whatever, but I'm going to go to the ballpark and have fun. But
and
once
also,
they start.
As a sports fan, though, you had other things, other points of pride, right? You had the Bulls dynasty.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Followed by the Blackhawks. So you had something where you're like, okay, we know what it's like to win and be happy, just not with our Cubs.
Right. But once you start winning, if you're a Cubs fan and you don't care about anything else, because there are some people who don't, they only care about baseball. Once that happens, though, and you see what it's like to be a winning team fairly regularly, you realize that when your team stinks, that that's not fun. Like, that isn't fun to go watch games and pay money to go do that. When I have seen what it's like on the other end, I've seen what it's like to actually enjoy some winning baseball.
If you asked your average Cubs fan who their biggest rival is, what would they say?
Oh, it's the Cardinals.
Cardinals.
Okay, and if you ask,
and then the White Sox are right there, but right I think there. That because
that's more of
it's more recent.
Well,
I mean, it's really since interleague play because before that they never played each other.
There was always an animosity, and it's more of a White Sox fan hates the Cubs more than a Cubs fan hates the White Sox.
Right.
The Cubs fans kind of don't care about the White
Sox.
That's
right. That's right.
Sox fans though despise the Cubs because they get all the attention.
What about if you ask the average Cardinals fan?
Oh, it's probably Cubs. Yeah,
it's
would
definitely Cubs.
Would anybody throw in like the Reds or the Dodgers?
No. When I was a kid, we didn't hate the Cubs. We hated the Mets.
Yeah,
and we hated the
Pond
Braves.
Scum.
Yeah.
Mets and Braves.
I remember the hate.
It wasn't
because
the Cubs.
Braves were so good.
And because it's interesting, if you ask any Blues fan who was our biggest rival in the 90s, they all say the Detroit Red Wings.
It was Detroit. But I mean, come on. Yeah,
100%.
Our buddy Randy Carricker had to punch the Red Wings fan in the face.
But if you ask Detroit who was their biggest rival in the 90s, it's the Colorado Avalanche.
Yes.
Because they always got rid of the Blues. Like, it's the Red Wings would dispose of the Blues in the playoffs, and that was always fascinating and irritating to me that our biggest rival was the Red Wings, and the Red Wings, they're like, oh yeah, the Blues, no. Our biggest rival were the Avalanche.
Now,
Avalanche fan, or, excuse me, no Red Wings fan would bring up the Blues.
No, they would say the Blues are a rival.
But
the rivals were Colorado and Chicago.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And the thing, the Blues and the Blackhawks could never coordinate the teams being good.
No.
So it was a great rivalry, but it was always one team was good and one team was bad. They could never.
There might have been some one-off years where they were both kind of good.
There were a few years during the Blackhawks run where the Blues were good, but they weren't Stanley Cup good.
No, and it was never like for 3-4 years in a row both teams were
elite.
For like that. Yeah. Not in my lifetime anyway.
Yeah, it's fascinating, and I know that's part of any rivalry, right? There are ebbs and flows in who's good and when. And it is less fun when one side is not competitive. And obviously the Cubs, not competitive this year.
No, it's like good. It's like playing Tecmo Bowl with two players, but the other controller gets unused.
No, it's not. It's like playing Tecmo Bowl and letting somebody use Bo Jackson, who was unstoppable.
Yeah.
Just defenders just bounced.
There was a rule against that. If you were playing, you had to have a rule. Can't have Bo Jackson.
No, you couldn't use the Raiders. And you couldn't use the 49ers because the slant to Brent Jones over the middle was unstoppable.
Yep. So, couldn't beat it.
Yep. There you go. Gamer nerd stuff for you. We got Mike Claiborne coming your way, coming up at the top of the hour. You're listening to the show on KMOX. All right, back in on the show. Time to get into some of the trending stories. And boy, I'm not truly joking, really truly observing how many big weighty stories that have been in the news. And, you know, we've been at the same time we're dealing with the story today, the Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade. We've got the continuing, not today, but the continuing of the January 6th hearings. And of course, the efforts that are now bearing fruit to pass some form of gun reform. And that has been done today. It is heading to the president's office. So that's kind of what's trending now. Although I don't think that's getting or going to get the amount of coverage as it would on a normal day. That would normally be kind of headline news, but it's going to fall in line second in the list today, I would think.
Right, and it was something we probably would have gotten into a little bit already had they not actually passed it, because I don't think we knew for sure that was going to be done today. But once the Senate, and there were 65 people who voted in favor of it, which means it is a truly bipartisan bill. You knew the House was going to pass it, and you know the president's going to sign it. So this is good. I think it's objectively good. It may not be great. It may not be perfect. It certainly isn't as far as a lot of people would like to have seen the law go. But I don't think you can discount the fact that at least on this one issue here, in this sliver of time that we've got, people came together and they made a decision, and they compromised on something. We do not compromise any longer. This government does not really compromise. Congress hasn't in a very long time, and you can't be seen working with the other side, because then you're not conservative enough, or you are not liberal enough, or whatever it is. So it's nice that we at least have gotten somewhere on this, and I think that's an important step. I don't know that it leads to anything else. If I'm an idealist, which I'm not, but if I were, I would like to think that this would open the door for maybe something else down the line, and hopefully soon, two sides coming together, realize they don't agree on a lot, but they can find some compromise in the middle. I would like to think this opens the door for that, but I highly doubt it.
You want to hear some of the things that are being, or like, what started trending earlier today was the topic was hashtag 15 Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the 15 Republicans that voted in favor of these laws. And they are getting absolutely hammered. You're getting tweets like this one that say 15 Republicans in the Senate have no regard for the founding fathers or the U.S. Constitution. This one is being phrased. Now, we're sitting here talking about it being reasonable. It's not a big step. It's a first step, blah, blah, blah. And this Twitter account, Gun Owners of America, says it's gun confiscation laws, gun purchase wait periods, backdoor UBCs, passed the Senate with the support of 15 Republicans. They're going to challenge. They're saying we're going to challenge all of this. So there's we're looking at this and saying incremental movement. And there are people saying this is super extreme and you're crushing the
Which
Constitution.
It isn't. It just no, but very I mean, simply
that,
is not that, extreme.
That illustrates how difficult it is to get these compromises.
Right. And that I think is a major problem with the country as a whole is that we can't even agree that some things are really reasonable here. This is a reasonable thing that two sides have decided. It's very difficult to me that we can't get to that place where compromise is okay.
And the vast majority of gun owners, and we talk about this all the time, the vast majority of gun owners, well, and they're law-abiding citizens.
Right.
So what this bill does is it involves red flag laws, enhanced background checks to include juvenile records, and they close the boyfriend loophole, quote unquote, by keeping guns away from non-spouse dating partners convicted of abuse. If you are a law-abiding citizen, this does not affect you. It doesn't. Like, even if you are looking at making sure that you have a license, that your gun is registered, that's good because it means that law-abiding citizens can keep their guns and non-law-abiding citizens and criminals cannot get guns, or it makes it harder for them to get guns, or if they're found in illegal possession, the cops can do something about it. And if you are pro-gun, you want to make sure that we've got a control on this right. This is saying, hey, we're keeping things under control. It's not going to be willy-nilly in the same way that the First Amendment has certain limitations. It's okay to make it harder for criminals to have guns.
And we hear from law-abiding gun owners all the time that this is totally reasonable, that some of these measures here are completely reasonable. And in fact, it makes you as a gun owner, as a law-abiding gun owner, this kind of takes the attention off you a little bit more. Because if you are truly concerned that somebody's going to come for your gun someday, which is never, ever, ever going to happen, stuff like this should at least alleviate those concerns.
Well, and again, like they track if you're buying Sudafed. And yeah. How much you're buying.
Yeah, you can't buy that. I got it one time, and they're like, I need your ID. Yeah. It's like, oh, what's that for?
You need to make sure you're not doing it all the time.
Or using it to make meth.
Well, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. Like, yeah. They don't care if you have a cold
all the time.
The
purchase history of the Uvalde shooter was highly suspicious. He could not have bought Sudafed the way he bought those guns and that ammunition.
Right. But again, the response from the other side of this debate is extreme. I mean, it's like, and I don't mean extreme like calling for any action other than legislative action, but saying here's a tweet that says 15 Republicans in the Senate voted to spit on the Constitution. I mean, again, I think, Amy, you nailed it. This is about making sure that the people who do things the right way get to continue doing them the right way. And I don't understand why we submit to all of these controls and all of these standards that we have to pass, for example, to get a driver's license. No, I don't have a right to have a car, but I need a car a lot more than I need a gun. I mean, I need to get to work. I need to go places, but I still have to prove that I'm physically able to do it. And then I have to pass a test with an instructor in front of me to show that I also have some mental capacity to do this as well.
And the Constitution does not tell you that you can have the firearm completely unregulated. Does not tell you that.
Right. And again, if there was a Supreme Court ruling on Tuesday in favor of gun rights, 6-3.
Right. It's a different issue, right? I mean, this is about people's ability to carry handguns. And it was about a state of New York law. To me, this is what it is. It's not an all or nothing argument.
Right.
You can have, say, that this ruling made sense. And this decision to make sure that we have red flag laws to protect us from people that do bad things can also make sense.
Baseball is back. Basketball is heating up. And the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.